time for Type 40, your Doctor Who podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network. It's the show where we take an in-depth and closer look at this beloved television series, the spin-offs, and even the merchandise in Doctor Who's a global fandom phenomenon that shaped the landscape of science fiction and fantasy for well over five decades. So step into our TARDIS and share our journey together here on Type 40. Hello, welcome. Yes, the Time Vortex, it's spat us out again for another helping of Who goodness to pass some time. I'm sure the Doctor would approve. All the Doctors. I'm Dan Hadley, your regular Type 40 pilot, Birmingham's true king of the geeks. Most crucially, I'm a lifelong Doctor Who fan, as maybe you are. But, you know, you could be newer to the Whoniverse, and that's more than okay too. Whenever you join the Doctor's travels, and whatever grade of fan you clash yourself in, everybody's welcome. There's no gatekeeping aboard the Type 40, wherever you are in the world, or other worlds out there in time and space. We're all companions and friends together. Yes, because this is one of the best things about modern Doctor Who fandom and modern media, isn't it? How easy it is for us to connect and share and compare across the fandom and across the world. And with this in mind, well, I've invited my guest for this edition of the show. She's a photographer, she's a writer, she's a cosplayer of great note, and she's a podcaster. So this isn't her first rodeo. Welcome to the show, Monica Duarte.
Hi, thank you so much for having me here. I'm so excited to finally get to talk face-to-face with you.
Hi, now, because we've been in contact for a little while, haven't we? Sharing geeky things across Instagram and things like that.
Yeah, I really like your Instagram for the Type 40 podcast because it's got, you know, I get excited anytime I see Doctor Who content. So,
well, yeah, we try and vary it up on there with the talk about the podcast, little things from both the classic and the new series, because with Twitter and Instagram and all these things, you know, they've all got their own little niches, haven't they? And we go to them for different things, I think.
Yeah, and what I like about your, you know, online presence is that it's very friendly to all those different niches, like when it comes to Doctor Who. So you have a lot of, you know, despite how you may feel about the new season or whatever, you still show some love to the new season and you have a lot of love for the classic stuff. And I love that so much.
That's it. There's more than enough to go around. The way I see it is Doctor Who and the Doctor Who fandom is just bigger than all of that. It's all more than the sum of its parts. And you know, what I like about the content that I've seen coming from you is all that really vivid imagery from your own photography and your own life and general geeky life. Tell us a little bit about your photography and what that's, where that comes from and where you do it.
So it all started when I started going to conventions in like 2012 or 2013. I can't remember how long ago it was, but I started taking photos on my cell phone and just kind of like, I would see all these cosplayers or just cool exhibits at conventions. And I would get really excited because it was my first time seeing like the stuff that I love, you know, expressed, you know, right in front of me and not like on television. And so I would take photos and, you know, I would post it on my Instagram account. And people would be like, oh, you know, that's so cool. Or I'd get a lot of comments about like, you know, where did you go? Where were you at? And so I would start sharing like, you know, the photos and I would start sharing, hey, this convention is coming up. Like, just so people would know. And afterwards they'd be like, oh, how was the convention? It just started from that. And eventually I started to upgrade from a cell phone to an actual nicer camera.
A DSLR, something like that, have you got?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I got myself a Nikon and I started taking photos of cosplayers, and I have a photography page on Instagram called Geek and Cosplay Report, where I post nothing about myself, but only other cosplayers that I see, because I just think cosplayers are so cool and they put so much love and attention into their work. And so I just wanted to take pictures of that and share it. And so that's kind of where it started. A couple different websites reached out, Temple Geek and that hashtag show. And they said, hey, can you take photos at conventions for us? Oh, can you like write about the convention for us? And that's where it started. And before you knew it, I was just like, podcasts started happening. And I started going to conventions as a member of press and covering different cons. And like, I just fell into it. I never like set out to do it. It was just something that like came out of like a passion of just sharing what you love.
Instagram in particular is good for that, isn't it? About the transmission of being in a moment. I think you could say that about any kind of photography, couldn't you? That it's all about capturing a moment and communicating the feeling of that moment to whoever may look at it afterwards. And in doing so with the cosplayers at conventions, you're sort of celebrating, because they're in a moment in themselves, aren't they, when they're in their cosplay and they're playing that role. And it's a way of, okay, you can't capture that moment that they feel inside, but you can from the exterior.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like, I just love to love things. And yeah. So like, I love how much cosplayers or just anybody really, they have this need to like express their fandom and celebrate their fandom. And so for them, it's building a costume or building a TARDIS or whatever it is, like a Dalek or something. So, you know, people go out there and they engineer these amazing like actual Daleks that move around, and that's so exciting. And like, I just want to share that. And so I just love that people love things, and I love sharing what they love.
Monica, you're definitely, definitely our kind of person. This is very much how we feel around here too. And I think it's pretty clear that plenty of our listeners will probably have heard you before, likely have seen some of your work because you've been in Doctor Who magazine and SFX and things.
Yeah, that was really cool. A really good friend of mine and for SFX magazine, his cosplay was being shared. His Fifth Doctor cosplay was being shared. And, you know, I had taken some photos of him while he was here. Oh, wow. And I got my picture published that way through him. And then for Gallifrey One, they were looking for photographers to kind of take photos of the convention and things that were going on. And so they chose my pictures for that. And I was really excited.
And you still get a kick out of every single time, don't you? I can tell.
Yeah, that's fun.
Good for you. That's fantastic. Well, before we get into our sort of big catch-up with all things current in Doctor Who, because that's what we're in for today, to sort of do our autumn update for 2019, there's a couple of essential fixed points that we've got to observe as part of the Fandom Podcast Network. Each and every edition of this show, past, present and future, is easily found on the FPNet master feed. That's at fpnet.podbean.com and FPNet on the Podbean app, if you know where to find that, on the App Store, everywhere. The Fandom Podcast Network's also on Spotify, Stitcher and Google Play, as well as the Apple Podcasts app, of course, formerly known as iTunes. But you can search for us there, add us and share us. If you're feeling brave, there's our social media presence. Instagram, again, and Twitter, Type 40 Doctor Who. There's our Type 40 Facebook page. And the very heart of our TARDIS, the ever lively, always geeky Type 40 Doctor Who Facebook group. You can join a whole TARDIS full of companions there for real-time Doctor Who talk and shares every single day. There's links to all of that in the show notes, as always. Monica, so where can people find you across social media? Where you gram, but you do you tweet? Do you snap or anything else?
I'm mainly on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is ThisDorkyNerd, and that's mainly where I do everything. But I'm also on the Temple of Geek Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. I just kind of manage the social media for them, so it's more you're talking to the website. But, you know, it's usually responding to you.
And, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter as The Spacebook, talking about all things inside and outside of the TARDIS in movies, television, comics, and just plain geeking out, as is my wont, daily in the Spacebook Facebook group too. Come and find us. Come and have a chat. 2019, Monica, it's all really been about chat so far, hasn't it? All talk and so little action for us patient Doctor Who fans. The longest running science fiction and fantasy show in the world last aired a new episode on New Year's Day, shortly followed by the news that was that, really, and they'd see us again next year. Chris Chibnall, a man of few words, it has to be said, he issued this little statement. We're off again. Well, we never actually stopped, as Jodie Whittaker's Doctor and friends have been winning the hearts and families across the nation this autumn. We've been busy with a whole new set of action-packed adventures for the 13th Doctor. We adore making this show, and we've been blown away by the response from audiences, so we can't wait to bring more scares and more monsters. So Doctor Who was back in production at that point almost instantly, and filming on Series 12 started in earnest in South Africa. Glorious South Africa with Jodie Whittaker, Bradley Walsh, Mandip Gill and Tosin Cole, before hitting even more exotic locations like Swansea, Barry Island, Sheffield and good old Cardiff. We love you, Cardiff. In Great Britain, speaking candidly, we always speak candidly on Type 40, Doctor Who's profile hasn't really been lower since before it came back. In that sort of countdown through 2003 through to 2005, it's quite a stark contrast to the build-up to Series 11, which was also mega secretive, but there was this sort of building excitement then. But I'm interested to learn, though, about Doctor Who from your perspective and in your part of the world, in California, in 2019. What's the feeling and profile of Doctor Who there at the moment?
You know, I feel like maybe it's the same as where you were at. I feel like the fandom has been kind of universal on this. Yeah. It's a little... some people love it, some people don't love it. And, you know, my partner, he always says, you know, that the Doctor Who community has fallen off, it's going away, there's not as many people involved. And I think it just has to do with which community we're in. So, for example, fans of this last season, I interact a lot with those kind of fans, and I feel like it's still very much alive. There's a lot of excitement. So it just depends on where you are and what kind of Doctor Who community you're a part of or engaging in, that you see that, or what you see. It just depends on what community you're a part of.
So you can feel it's still sort of pulsing, and there's still this sort of sense of anticipation from certain people that you're mixing with.
Absolutely. And I was just actually having this conversation with a friend of mine earlier, where we were just hoping that at New York Comic Con there would have been a secret presence, or there would have been more presence, or a trailer dropped at the very minimum for the new season, or some kind of announcement. And we were really disappointed that, you know, there was no Doctor Who presence at New York Comic Con. That was really hard for us, as just waiting and waiting for the next season. At least for me, I was really excited about season 11, so I just want more Doctor Who now.
There's nothing wrong with wanting more Doctor Who, because I think after 2010, I mean, Carl Wagner, who's one of our co-hosts on this show, he talks about how the whole of Doctor Who pretty much exploded in America with Matt Smith and with BBC Absolutely. America getting on board, and built and built and built from there, really. And although Peter Capaldi was perhaps not as popular as Matt Smith, that it still sort of maintained this level of interest, and still built as people binge watched, I suppose, everything from series one right the way through to series 10, I suppose. But is Doctor Who, has it ever really been a household name? Is it a known entity now, or is it still a bit of a niche thing?
I believe it's still kind of a niche thing. I think that having Doctor Who in the United States on Netflix was what introduced a lot of people to Doctor Who in general. I'd never heard of Doctor Who until 2013. I had no idea what it was. And, you know, my brother and my partner, they were watching it, and I was like, what is that cheesy thing you're watching? That looks so dumb. Look at those special effects. They're terrible. Why are you watching this? And I just thought it was so weird, but they were binging it on Netflix. And then one day I sat down and I watched Matt Smith's very first episode, The 11th Hour. And I was like, oh, this is amazing. And I watched Matt Smith's run first, and then went back and watched 9, 10. And it wasn't until we lost the Pawns that I actually saw Doctor Who in real time, because I had just binged it. So I don't think that it's a big household name. Most people that I know have learned about Doctor Who through my enthusiasm for it and my family's enthusiasm for it. So now they're like, they'll see it in a shop and be like, oh, that's that thing that they like. I don't think it's a household name. It's definitely not as popular as a Game of Thrones or Stranger Things, Back to the Future or something like that. But it is definitely massive. It's a big presence, but it's still, I think, it's not a household name.
There's always been differences, and what I notice as a big thing entertainment wise is the difference between our network television. We have a sort of, even now, we're still tied to a model that was set up, I'm going to say 40 to 50 years ago in the 60s. And I get the impression that it's a similar story in America, that it's still tied to the way that American networks were set up in the late 50s and early 60s. And that these things are, I mean, for example, plenty of series, even really expensive genre shows on American television, they crank out 20 episodes plus per year per season, don't they? Slightly different on the streaming platforms. You just mentioned Stranger Things and Game of Thrones and things like that. They're sort of shorter runs every 18 months to 2 years, prestigious shows. I was wondering that where does, from your perspective, where does Doctor Who sit in the mix of that programming for you? Does it transmit it well? And which of those two camps do you feel it belongs in? Do you feel that frustration?
I feel a frustration as far as, like, in the United States, if a show is off for 2 years or more than a year, it's been canceled. You're not going to get the show anymore. Okay. So at least you know that show is done for. And maybe if there's a strong enough fan force that's, like, you know, begging the networks to bring it back, then you might...
No one likes to wait, do they? Don't get me wrong. No one likes to wait.
And I think The Expanse is a really good example of that, where Sci-Fi canceled it, but the fan base was just so strong about it that Amazon picked it up. But Doctor Who is so different in the sense that it can be off for 2-3 years, it can be off for 10 years, and it's still going. And so I'm a little bit scared about it, because I'm like, what if we wait 5 years for giving me a new season? And that's totally acceptable, but I need it now.
They say that sort of absence makes the heart grow fonder, but you can only sort of ride off that for so long before people just go off and do other things, or find other things, or this sort of, or even worse, really, where they start to not care at all. And there is this sort of greater, what I would probably call politely, a malaise about the fan base at the moment. And I think that really that can't be the fault of either the fan base or the viewing public. I do think this is the BBC dropping the ball and not realizing what they've got, or certainly if they've got these ambitions that Doctor Who should be mentioned in the same breath as Game of Thrones and Stranger Things, those shows we keep mentioning, then you've got to sort of step up to that platform and deliver a generally more robust show with a greater momentum behind it that is maintained even while it's off the air. I think Russell T. Davies and Stephen Moffat both, they seemed to manage that, didn't they? That it was never far from our minds.
Yeah, and I think the difference there is, especially with like Stephen Moffat or Russell T. Davies, is I feel that they gave us everything, even in the off season, where Chibnall is much more secretive. And so I think that while we're waiting, we just want anything, right? We want to consume anything Doctor Who. And so Moffat was really great at that. He almost spoiled everything for himself because he gave it away at the beginning. But at least we were consuming some content. At least we knew what was happening. And I know that Chibnall is more about like the surprise element, and he likes to like shock you or surprise you, or it's more satisfying in that way while you're watching it because nothing was spoiled for you. Mm-hmm. Which is really great.
And yeah, I've always been an advocate of that too. Yeah.
And I think it's great, but it's so different from what we're used to that it almost feels like they're keeping it from us. And and that's just kind of how I see those different eras, is like, you know, sometimes I would have wished, like, for example, with the Bill Potts series where they reveal the Master comes back.
Yeah.
I think because I binged Doctor Who, so I didn't see it in real time for, you know, at least New Who, everything was a surprise to me. You know, when Matt Smith in Demon's Run, where he goes and he, you know, he reveals that he was in the monk suit the whole time.
Yeah.
I like screamed when he's going to say, when he says, Amelia Pond, get your coat. I was like, ah, you know. But when I was watching, you know, the episodes with Will Potts, where you find out the Master was really in disguise the whole time I was looking for the Master, because I knew they had announced that he was going to be there. And so the whole time it kind of like, I would have, it would have been a more aha moment had I not known he was going to return.
I think, yeah, that's probably the biggest shame of the last few years. The fact that, see, a tabloid was about to break that story, a tabloid newspaper in the UK. So they had intended on keeping that a secret. But yeah, the newspapers do like spoiling these things for us just to sell a few more papers. I mean, newspapers are dying anyway.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a real travesty, because you could see that episode of TV was really nicely crafted. And I do know a few people who it still did take them by surprise, but not many. It certainly, it would have fooled me. If I hadn't have known that John Sim was back, I wouldn't have been looking for him. So I know exactly what you mean. And I think in that instance, Stephen Moffat's arm was twisted.
Absolutely.
But,
that's what
but generally, he did hold things back just to the right measure. Well, recently I read a quote on the show from one of the editors of Doctor Who magazine from the past, and he said the showrunners of all the big shows really have kind of got to play with the audience and become part of this dialogue and celebrate it the way that we do, and you know, throw a dog a bone every now and again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great that, and I think what's helped the Doctor Who fandom for so long is that there's things like Big Finish and the Cogmith books and, you know, all the other novels that have come out that kind of give you something to do. There's these expanded universes, the spin-off shows. So those things are all nice, but we're all there for like the main core, which is Doctor Who. And like you said, give a dog a bone. Like, just give me a tease. Just let me know everything's still okay. Don't make me worry.
Yeah, Doctor Who itself is the main event. But what concerns me is that, you know, as much as I love surprises and as much as I did used to moan about knowing too much, even in the Russell T Davies era, where I don't think he put many a step wrong, Russell. I do think that if you're playing the game that Chris Chibnall is at the moment in holding back so much to preserve surprises, then the byproduct of that is audience expectation. When we know that they're doing it deliberately, our expectation can't help but rise even more. So it's almost as if whatever they deliver has got to be twice as good to match what's built up in our heads and how good we always want Doctor Who to be. Doctor Who is the best television show ever created. At its best, it gets everybody talking, and it's sort of the ultimate family adventure series, and we just want to be pulled along with it and to ride the roller coaster, if you like, which it wasn't so much in the classic era maybe, but I think the same sentiment was there, that sort of week to week thrill. They hold back this amount, I believe, at their peril. We gauge these things, don't we, with obviously what we read, what we hear, what we see, and that's how we respond. How we may get excited, how we may start counting down the weeks to a new series of Doctor Who, or not, I suppose. But I was interested in what you mentioned there about conventions, because the convention floor, which you are, you know, you're out there quite regularly, aren't you? In the trenches, taking photographs, talking to people, interviewing people, and writing articles. And this is the grassroots of fandom, really. Those of us who do such things, who go to the conventions and in day-to-day life, you know, we tend to become the go-to guys and girls, don't we? For the people who aren't so aware of it, you know, and so, oh, that show, when is that coming back? We get that question asked of us a lot. And at times like this, we just don't know what to say, do we? You know, it's, have people been asking you? People expect you to have all the answers.
I get asked, especially like around San Diego Comic-Con or New York Comic-Con, I was asked a lot, like, oh, is there going to be a trailer? Is there going to be a panel? Is there going to be a presence? Because I'll always post on social media, like, I'm at this panel or I'm at this thing. And they're like, oh, I wish I would have known about that. Or, oh, I wish I could have been there. So I do get asked, like, oh, are you going to this? And it's sometimes it's a little disappointing to be like, no, there's no panel this year, or no, there's no big thing happening. For San Diego Comic-Con, I wrote an article about, here's all the Doctor Who related stuff that you mm-hmm. can enjoy while you're at San Diego Comic-Con, even though San Diego Comic-Con doesn't have a Doctor Who presence this year.
So you made it your business to go around the convention itself and just take stock of what was there for Doctor Who fans.
Right. So like when they released the schedule, I went through every panel schedule list, and I went through everything, and I looked for anything that was Doctor Who related or who had a member of the Doctor Who cast. So for example, Freema was at San Diego Comic-Con, so I listed any panel she was on. She ended up being on a panel about badass women in sci-fi.
That
And
sounds good.
so that was exciting. And so obviously I was like, hey, if you want to see her, because you're a Doctor Who fan or whatever, these are the panels she'll be on. And that's just kind of the type of thing that I did. I was looking for example, when I saw David Tennant at San Diego Comic-Con, it was at the DuckTales panel. And
That did look a lot of fun. I think I went and watched that on video.
oh, and it was wonderful. The DuckTales panels, for anybody who ever goes to San Diego Comic-Con, consistently for the last 3 years has been the best panel of the con, in my opinion.
Oh,
The
okay.
cast is just marvelous. And this year they had Lin-Manuel Miranda as the surprise guest. Never miss a DuckTales panel, is all I have to say.
What tends to happen in my experience, just watching these, 'cause I haven't been to one of these huge conventions, I haven't been to a convention for a long time now, is that invariably, whatever they're there to promote with a Doctor Who actor, somebody will always ask a question that's Doctor Who related. Do you find that too?
And sometimes I feel a little bad because they're there to promote those shows. But they're dressed up like, for example, at the DuckTales panel where David Tennant was there, everybody in the audience was dressed as like something from Doctor Who. And
Oh
every question was about like, oh, you're my favorite doctor or this or that. And I'm
no.
like, oh, but they're here about DuckTales. And so,
Oh
but I also get it because for some of these people, this will be their only chance to ever interact with David Tennant. So it's like, I get it, but yeah, it's a little awkward for
it
the rest
is
of
a
the cast.
great voice cast. I mean, you can, I suppose, one can only imagine that they maybe other series or films that they're involved with, they've maybe had it the other way too.
Yeah.
You would hope. When San Diego 2018 happened here on Type 40, we covered it an entire episode about that one convention. None of us actually went, but some of our friends did, and we were all over that coverage and all the excitement of Jodie Whittaker and the rest of the cast being there, of Chris Chibnall being there. There was the big thing where Jodie was walking the catwalk. That electrifying
I
footage of her.
have a wonderful story about that, if you don't mind. I would
Oh,
love
please do.
to share. So I was really lucky that I got to meet Jodie. My family and I, we took a selfie with her. Well, my kids and my partner did. We got to meet Jodie Whittaker at the BBC booth right after the panel, which was really great. And because I'm a member of the press, I was able to kind of talk to other, like the cameraman that was following Jodie Whittaker around. And I was on the riser where you take photographs of everybody at the fashion show that she ended up going to that night. It was
Oh, wow.
her fashion show. So I was there as a photographer to take pictures of the show. And I see the cameraman there from the BBC. And I thought it was weird because they hadn't announced anybody was going to be there. I was like, why is the BBC here? Like, that's random to see them at a fashion show, but whatever.
See.
The cameraman comes in and he's like, oh man, I'm sorry I'm late. Thanks for because I was helping him like set up. And he's like, thanks. He's like, I've been following Jodie all day. And it didn't hit me when he said that I've been following Jodie all day. I thought he was just late because he was following Jodie. I didn't realize he was telling me Jodie's gonna be there. And it was a huge surprise. And I knew that her universe had come out with a fashion line for it. And we started talking a little bit, and I said, we got to meet Jodie, and my kids took a picture with her. She was really great. And he told me that when at that point they had the cast, they had Tosin, they had Mandeep, and they had Jodie visit the booth, but they were getting such a crowd around them that security pulled them away. And
That's
so,
understandable.
yeah, and so they started going away, and he told me that Jodie was like, no, I have to go back. Look at all those people that were calling my name. And he said that she went back and made sure she took a photo with every kid there and anybody dressed as her, and that she signed autographs. And security kept trying to pull away. And she's like, no, they're calling my name. Like, I have to be here. And I just thought that was like such an incredible story that, you know, that he was telling me. And this is somebody who's not a Doctor Who fan. He's just there to film. And I was like, wow, that's so great. He's like, yeah, she's really about the fans. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, they're revealing the 13th Doctor coat, and it's Jodie in the coat for, you know, the Her Universe coat walking down the catwalk, and nobody knew. The crowd just erupted in cheers, and she was in my lens, and I was so taken back as a fan that, like, I started shaking the camera, and I couldn't press the button, and I was like, oh my God, the Doctor's right here, she's in my lens, like.
Now, it really did transmit, just watching the video footage of that, the atmosphere and the sense of, well, like you say, nobody knew it was her under there, but there was still this anticipation.
Yeah, even Ashley Eckstein didn't know she was going to be there, and they had to rustle up a coat for her because she wasn't, planned. It was just kind of like, she was like, oh, I'm going to go. They invited her. They didn't think she'd show up, and she showed up, and the whole thing was, it was mainly improvised last minute. She had to borrow somebody's coat.
That is incredible. And the whole thing, I mean, to be that conscientious and to be that warm, particularly with the children, is it quite a family-friendly environment then? There's a lot of children there?
There's a lot of children there, but I wouldn't say it's family-friendly because of the crowds. It's very overwhelming and really packed. I do take my children, but I also have to take like noise canceling headphones for the younger one. There's nowhere to like kind of sit and relax. And, you know, kids want to run around, and panels are boring for them. And San Diego Comic-Con really is about just being at the panels. And even though the exhibits try really hard to put on like these family friendly like things to do, the lines are so intense. And they're so long, and you can be in line for 5 hours, and what kid wants to stand in those lines?
Mine definitely wouldn't have done.
So for my kid, who like my older one, my teenager, he's like, okay, yeah, like I'll sit in these lines to see these actors that I care about. But the younger one is like, I'm over it. This is too much. So what we do is we bring the Switch, or we bring a tablet, noise canceling headphones, a ton of snacks. And if it wasn't for the fact that I would feel bad leaving them at home, like, I don't think it's really kid-friendly.
I have always wondered, and particularly with that story you've just told about Jodie Whittaker meeting the children.
She was wonderful. Like, she was just wonderful. And I think that sets up a kind of weird expectation for people, because as individual people, the entire cast of season 11 is so wonderful that you want to love season 11. And I know, like, in my family, like, we had met Jodie before we saw season 11. Yeah. So my kid was like, I need her Sonic. You know, I need this Jodie Whittaker thing. I need all the Jodie Whittaker things. And
one of our hosts was like that, and he's a 47-year-old man.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, you know, my partner, he's sitting there, and he's like, I need my own coat. You get a Jodie Whittaker coat, but I need one too. And it was just like, he really wanted to love it, and he was so excited. And also, like, genuinely, he loves Jodie Whittaker as, like, a person, and he loves, you know, he loves the entire cast. He thinks they're so great and so fun together. But when my partner and my son watched season 11, they were just like, wow, I don't like this.
Yeah, they're not alone. It has to be said. That's so. Is the divide in your house very similar to the divide that's kind of out there in fandom at present?
I think so, and that's okay. You know, like, I love Peter Capaldi. Like, I love him as a person and an actor. And
he's a wonderful man.
I think he's wonderful, and he's so gracious. And we're so lucky to have him in, you know, as part of the fandom, and because he is a fan himself. And also, we're just lucky to have him, but I really didn't like his run. And it was this thing. I thought season 9 was amazing, but the rest of it just didn't do it for me. And that's okay, you know? And maybe because I started with Matt Smith, and I just kind of, you know, it's the way you start with your first doctor, whoever it is.
So following Doctor Who can be a rough ride. Sometimes you've got to hang on, haven't you? I think that's
Love Doctor Who any less. Like, I still loved it so much, and I still love it
because the fundamentals were still there. What had pulled you in was still there to some degree or another.
And not to mention the casting of Capaldi's run is so great. I loved Osgood. I loved Missy. I loved Jenna Coleman as Clara. you know, but the actual storylines and, you know, they were okay. I still love the fandom. I still love the cast. I still love watching Doctor Who, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing.
With that event at Comic-Con in 2018, it is surprising then that they chose to have no presence at all at the 2019 event, isn't it? You know, I know that they closed down during Comic-Con time. So it did seem like they intended on being there. But there have been rumours of production problems of Doctor Who over the summer and various things that were up in the air. So who knows what changed there. I found it a surprise. Others were saying, well, you know, what do you expect? It's still 6 months away until it airs. My feeling was, when you've created the kind of impact that you're talking about there, I mean, the joy, people will be able to hear the joy in your voice, Monica. I can see it on your face. To not return to the event 12 months later, I feel that that was a mistake for them. But I was even more surprised that there was also no presence at all at the New York Comic Con. If only because BBC America themselves are based in New York. Did you go to that? Do you know anybody who went to that one?
I didn't go to it. We did have a member of our team with Temple of Geek that was there. And it's a little disappointing, you know, especially like you said, they're based in New York. So we thought for sure, oh, they're going to New York Comic Con and they'll have a big panel like they did the year before. Maybe we'll get a trailer or something. I agree with you. It was a big mistake not to be there. I use Supernatural and The Expanse as an example. The Expanse was 6 months away from airing, you know, their new season. And they had a huge presence at San Diego Comic-Con. And the fan interactions, they've been at so many cons that it kind of keeps that hype alive. And yeah, it kind of keeps it going. And just like the interaction with their fans that they had in 2018 compared to 2019 hasn't been there, but that's what keeps us like engaging with the fans is so important. And so I was really sad not to see any level of that at those two cons.
Even more so with the internet, because we all see the panels, don't we? It's all, I mean, I dare say it doesn't compare to being there and feeling, picking up on the electricity of the event, but we all get to sort of witness it to some degree or another. We can all attend to a lesser degree. Everybody notices. All geeky eyes are on these Comic Cons. So yeah, I really think they're sort of playing with fire with not being there. The idea that the Supernatural cast, for example, God, those boys, they work hard. They make around 22 to 24 of those per year, don't they? And they have done for 15 years.
Exactly. And I think that's what keeps the fandom alive, is that interaction. And it is a little bit of like, the relationship doesn't go just one way, the fans adoring them. Yeah. Where with the Supernatural cast, I feel like they love their fans so much, and you see it, and that is rewarded in another season and another season. And it's rewarded with, you know, the fact that they have their own convention and they attend all these other conventions, and people are happy to spend all this money to take a photo with them or to get an autograph or just to interact with them. And I just think that's so cool. And that's how they've been able to keep the show going for so long, is that interaction. It's what brought The Expanse back, is that fan interaction and the fact that the cast has been so lovely. And I think that Doctor Who has that same quality as far as having just such a lovely cast and a well-rounded group of individuals like on these shows. I feel like Doctor Who has consistently cast amazing people, not just amazing actors, but they themselves are wonderful people. And it's a bummer not to see them at conventions. We as fans, we want to love the show, but we also want to give them love and say, hey, you know what, you made a difference for me, or you really impacted me, or these episodes were very special to me. And we just kind of want to give that back.
I think you're right. I think historically, with our cast, they've been excellent ambassadors for the show, like you say, and always been I think mindful of the fan instinct is the impression that I get. I mean, particularly people like John Barrowman, who's, you know, he travels everywhere with his Star Wars pillowcase, doesn't he? And things like that. Yeah. I don't think anybody understands it more than John Barrowman.
Absolutely.
And so people respond to him. They reciprocate all that affection, don't they? Because we recognise a sort of kinship. And of course, not every actor in the world's going to be a geek. That would be a big, big ask. Because it must be, for those who aren't, it could be quite hard. I mean, you know, it could be a bit overpowering for people who are jobbing actors who just want to get onto the same job. But yeah, I've seen the Supernatural cast, and I don't think the Doctor Who cast have ever taken it for granted, or the audience for granted. I think the BBC themselves are at the point now where they are taking the audience for granted, that they will continue to turn up year after year after year, and that's probably the case in Great Britain to some degree. But expecting that of the international audience, I think is they take that gamble at their peril. Yeah, I believe it's the London Comic Con this weekend. Have you seen anything of that?
You know, I saw that they had the costumes on display and that they doubled the size of their booth, and the art that's at London Comic Con was the same art that was at San Diego Comic Con.
And it's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, and it's so funny because at San Diego Comic Con. So I save my money every year to buy Doctor Who merch because I know that the BBC is going to steal everything from me. And I found this year that the merch was a little bit lacking. And so everything that was on the wall, I'm like, why isn't that in a t-shirt? Why isn't that on coffee mug? Why isn't that? I would buy all the 12 Doctors. I don't even watch the classic series, but I love Doctor Who, so I'm going to buy all 12 mugs.
Yeah. No, I thought it was. I assumed they'd got it on mugs and whatever else there.
Didn't. And I was so disappointed. I was like, I would have handed over all my money. Here's my money. And we save up for this because we know. And,
of course.
And I think the thing that I don't know who's in charge of marketing or the BBC or anything like that in general, but I think where they miss it is that Doctor Who has 50 years of 50 plus years of fans of appreciation for for every Doctor, and they could really capitalize on that. Like, I would love to own Classic Who Doctor t-shirts or anything like that, just because I love Doctor Who and I like support what I love, and I support it with my dollars. But I know people that just would love more merchandise for Classic Who or more merchandise, and it's really the fan art where the money's being made for these things, where the BBC could really capitalize on them. Just be like, hey, here's all that wall art was so lovely, I would have bought every t-shirt.
Yeah, this is it, because as a fan base, I think well, most fan bases are very creative, but I think Doctor Who fans in particular are very, very resourceful in what we create, as you talked about cosplayers earlier on, how we like to live the characters if we can, what we draw, what we paint. The fanfic is still very, very popular. And what else? I'm podcasting. I mean, who would do that, for example? Lunacy. But yeah, we're very resourceful as a fan base, but they can't rely on that forever. And they certainly can't slap down fans, because obviously we're living in times now where intellectual properties, Star Trek's probably the biggest example, where CBS are clamping down quite a lot on bootleg merchandise and on fan-created, unlicensed items, aren't they? And Doctor Who fandom is rife with that. So it would be a shame. It would be a shame if the BBC tightened up on that. But I can see it coming. And if they do so, but don't bring, as you've said, if they don't bring the balance of the merchandise that people, if we can't create it for ourselves, you've got to give it to us because we want to give you our money. It does seem strange of them not to. We're just a few years on, certainly in the United Kingdom, from a time where you could get Doctor Who anything. You've got the boxer shorts, you've got the oven gloves, you've got the cruet sets. Yeah, there was Doctor Who everything just a few short years ago. I was gifted for my birthday, Monica, get this, an electric Doctor Who toothbrush.
That's fun.
In the shape of a sonic screwdriver.
Kids would love that.
But you can't find anything like that around now. And to be honest, I have come to think of it, I haven't seen, because I do love the 13th Doctor's sonic screwdriver, and I haven't seen that in the shops for ages. I don't know what's going on. I thought the artwork was beautiful as well. There have been some announcements. I mean, it's actually today as we record this that all this has rolled out at London Comic Con. So they've announced that the next animated missing story, they've announced that today, the Fury from the Deep's the next story they're recreating as animation. They've announced more books. They've announced news about further Blu-rays and re-releases of Blu-rays and things like that. And all that stuff is lovely. But you know, you look across the hall, and at the same event, Stephen Moffat is there with Mark Gatiss promoting their new show Dracula, which must be back around the same time as Doctor Who. That must be screening, sorry, at the same time as Doctor Who. They're there with the where's the Series 12 lot? It does seem to be a shame. When do you think we're going to see our first snipper footage from Series 12? What's your gut instinct about that one, Monica?
I mean, I thought we would see it now. I thought that it was coming back sometime in January, right? Yeah. But I'm hearing rumors of April, and I've reached out to the BBC, and I've gotten no response on, like, you know, any kind of
really
confirmation. And so, because I want, like, for me, I don't like the clickbait, like, oh, rumors of this, rumors of that. I'm like, no, just tell me when. And yeah. So I reached out to the BBC, and I got no confirmation on a date or anything. So my guess is around the holidays, we, you know, we'll probably see a trailer, and maybe not until the spring, you know, the actual return of.
Yeah, I know a few people who are saying that it might not be back until the spring. My belief is that the show itself will be back sooner rather than later. And when they said early 2020, that they meant early 2020, it'll likely be very early 2020. But it wouldn't surprise me if we see some footage in the next couple of weeks at Children in Need, the Children in Need night that we have here in the UK. So I think if it does happen, it'll be a very short teaser trailer. Maybe even a footage that's not even from the show itself. Yeah. But who knows? We might see something soon. Heaven knows that there's certainly a fan base waiting to be wowed. We're going to take a quick break right now. And as I'm sure as a sort of geeky trend expert there, Monica, you're up on what all the fashionable fans are wearing these days. But plenty, you may not be aware of this, plenty are choosing to wear something from the Fandom Podcast Network stable. A whole Tee Public store full of these fantastic original designs on t-shirts, hats, mugs, tapestries. Search for the Fandom Podcast Network and you can wear as you listen to whichever of these shows is getting your time rotor spinning. Check this lot out.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. For you Highlander fans, we've got Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we cover all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater is for you movie buffs, our podcast celebrating the cult classics and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. We also have End Zone for you NFL fans, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast with hosts Tom, Brandon, and Chris discussing the master of suspense, Alfred Hitchcock. And for you Star Trek Discovery and Orville fans, we have Discoville, talking about everything Discovery and the Orville. And for you hard rock music fans, we have the Hair Metal podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And we also have Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, where we discuss all things Doctor Who, both past and present. And our newest podcast, Lethal Mullet, our podcast celebrating action movies from the 1980s with your host, Adam P. O'Brien. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now on Spotify. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network, on Instagram, Fandom Podcast Network, and also on Twitter at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and supporting the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
Yes, there's something for everybody. Prepare to boldly go there with a lick of paint and a new name for my personal favourite show. Discoville is now the United... No, it's not. It's the Union Federation podcast, no less. They're discussing not just Star Trek Discovery, but all those new Star Trek shows coming our way in the near future with Picard and animated series and all sorts. And the Orville too, let's not forget. So they're keeping the peace across the fictional universes. Do you watch any of those shows, Monica? Are you a Trekkie or an Orville-y?
I love Star Trek Next Generation so much. Oh, wow. And I love Voyager very much. And I'm so excited about Picard. I wanted to watch Discovery, but I wasn't willing to buy, into the streaming service for CBS to watch it. But they got me with Picard, so I'll buy it then.
Well, yeah, two shows. They're coming at you two-pronged, aren't they? I'm not sure when Discovery's on, but I think Picard starts middle towards the end of January.
It's really exciting. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm a big TNG fan too. So, any chance to see Patrick Stewart back in action? Obviously, I hope the material's good, but they'll have to really get it wrong to tune me out if they've got Patrick Stewart. They've got me pretty much no matter what. So, whilst Doctor Who's been off, what have you been watching? What's been filling the gap in your schedule?
So, right now, what's been filling the gap is The Expanse. I'm really loving that show. I just discovered it. Whovian introduced me to it, and I was obsessed and am still obsessed. So if you haven't watched that, it's on Amazon Prime.
No, I haven't. You're the second person to come on in the last couple of weeks to recommend The Expanse, funnily enough.
You know, if you're familiar, and this is how my friend talked me into it, did you see the episode with Bill Potts and the 12th Doctor Oxygen, where they're out of space and everything? So it's very much like that all the time. It's, if you're a fan of Doctor Who, I feel like it's a little bit more adult, but I feel like you would love this. It's about humanity in space and as we, go out into the cosmos and everything. And I watched it with very little context. I didn't really know what to expect, and I loved it. Yeah. I was really confused the first three or four episodes because I was like, what's going on? There's so many storylines. It was like kind of Game of Thrones where like you don't know who the main character is. Everybody's like,
oh yeah, I did struggle with that. The first two series of Game of Thrones were a blur to me, Micah.
I was like, what's going on? And then when all the storylines tie together, I was like, this is amazing.
So is it more sort of character-based and tension then there's no sort of monsters and things like that?
Well, the monsters are kind of, there is, I don't want to reveal too much. There is sort of like a...
It's science-based, would you say?
Definitely science-based, and it's very exciting because it mirrors what's going on today politically, but in a different way where, we go off into space and now Earth has colonized Mars. So now we have actual human Martians. They're the Martians.
Okay.
But in between, there's people that live out in space. They're the working class, the belters, they call them. And they're kind of like what connects Mars and Earth. And they've gone on to other planets as well, where they mine other planets. And it's really, really interesting where politically, Mars wants more power. The Belters want their basic human rights. They want their water. They want their fair wages and things like that. And
so it's sort of classic sci-fi in the sense that it's about society and about people and about metaphor in the same way that Gene Roddenberry's original vision for Star Trek was.
Absolutely. And the one thing that is so appealing about the show for me is that there are people who are bad and they're just greedy, bad people. But as a whole, humanity is good. And I love that message so much.
Well, that very much chimes with, I think that chimes with what Doctor Who's about. What I've always taken from Doctor Who. It's the least cynical show in TV history, I think.
And feel like we need that as a society.
We
need some hope.
Desperately. And I think that, obviously children, when children hit their teenage years, they kind of want things to be dystopian and bleak, don't they? And they go through that phase where, their favourite film, their favourite Star Wars film is like The Empire Strikes Back because the bad guys win and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. It's a sort of a symptom of all of that. But yeah, I'm still very much all for a hopeful representation of the future and for having as much fun with this stuff as possible. Nothing brightens things up more than a man in a rubber suit, does it? I think the monsters of Doctor Who will always be integral, and that's, as silly as some of it may seem, it's part of the charm. But we know very, very little about the cast of Series 12 where we are now, even though it could be only a couple of months away. We know that The guest cast includes James Buckley from The Inbetweeners, a sitcom in Great Britain, and Neil Stook, the actress Anjali Mahindra, who was in the Sarah Jane Adventures a few years ago, and recently Bodyguard. And then there's Stephen Fry. And that's, we don't even know who any of them are playing, but we know Stephen Fry, isn't it? We've known that for some time. So we've got that in our back pockets. But my eyes are drawn back again to that statement I mentioned earlier on of Chris Chibnall, that the team can't wait to bring more scares and more monsters. Because it seemed, and I don't know how you and your family felt last time, Monica, but it did seem in the last series there was a lack of monsters, a lack of returning villains, and that could also have been a misstep, but that Chris Chibnall may have had a major change of heart for series 12. We had the Jadoon confirmed some months ago. Now, whether you consider the Jadoon a classic monster or not, I don't know. I love the Jadoon myself. I've got a Jadoon upstairs, you know, got a great big sort of 10-inch figure. You can take the helmet off and everything, Monica. It's brilliant.
Ah, that sounds so cool.
I have to put a name for it. I'll put a picture of my Jadoon in the Instagram feed later. He hasn't got a name yet, but we could maybe have a competition. Somebody can name it. Yeah, so the Jadoon are back. But since then, we've had public sightings of both Cybermen and very recently Daleks on location shoots across Wales and Bristol. They all look refreshed and slightly changed and ready for action. Have you seen these pictures, Monica, the new old Daleks? How does it make you feel seeing all that come back?
So it's so funny. Like, I pay more attention to the clothes that they get seen in, and I try to dissect what they're wearing. So there's a picture where Jodie Whittaker, the whole cast is in tuxedos, and Jodie Whittaker has a big, like a winter coat on that's like hiding her outfit as she's signing autographs.
Oh.
And at the bottom, you kind of see that her coat is peeking out and it's black. And I'm like, oh my gosh, is she wearing a new coat? Does she have like a tuxedo style, like, you know, coat that's black? But yeah, so that's my obsession right now, is trying to find out like the cosplay aspect of it. What is Yaz wearing and where can I buy it? What is Tosin wearing and where can I buy it? So everybody's obsessed with, like, you know, the Daleks and everything, but I'm like, yeah, but what are they wearing? What's on their shirt so I know where to buy it?
Yeah, well, that's another big thing with cosplays. It's to get the screen accurate, or as near to screen accurate as they can possibly get, sometimes before the characters have even been on screen. I think I haven't seen that picture of them in the tuxedos, but that could be. I know very little about the stories that are coming up. I believe that there's one involving Mary Shelley, and there's a couple that may involve other sort of culturally relevant figures from throughout history.
Like Frankenstein? Mary Shelley?
Yeah. That, yeah, but I'm not sure how much truth there is in that, because I also heard rumours about Florence Nightingale being a subject of the new series. But one of the other things I heard quite a while ago now, when I'd sort of written it off a little bit, was that there might be a James Bond pastiche as part of the series. So if they were all in tuxedos, that could well chime with that.
That's kind of fun. That sounds really fun, and I'm excited. See, now I'm stoked. No.
Ejector seats in the TARDIS. It could be coming our way. Yeah, because the Cybermen costumes that they had out on location a little while ago, those they'd slightly changed those too. They'd got sort of spikes and things on there. They'd got like gauntlets and spiky boots, and they were slightly different. And the new Dalek, that's, we're not quite sure what's going on there, because they've got the old Daleks there too, and this new Daleks in the middle in sort of jet black, looking like Dalek Sek from the David Tennant ones in its sort of texture and things. We're all a bit intrigued by that. The BBC, of course, you know, they've denied that Doctor Who, well, they've decided to issue a statement that says that there's no comment, that, you know, that they won't acknowledge the fact that it was Doctor Who that was even filming on those occasions. So Chris Chibnall's, there's been no press release confirming any of those things.
It would be funny to find out that it was some other project. then it was nothing for this.
and then wipe the smile off our faces. Because I was really surprised to see that. Obviously, you expect like the paparazzi or fans. You know, we've all got cameras, digital cameras in our pockets now, but we can take these pictures if we're out. And there's people coming home from the pub, walking across the bridge, who saw the Dalek shoot happening. And they were taking pictures. But the following morning, BBC Radio Bristol was also sharing pictures from that shoot. I think there is no way. If that's the BBC themselves, Chris Chibnall will have been spitting chips over that.
It could have been also like fashion shoots. I've seen a lot of times where, like, you know, they'll have Jodie just posing with like an old Dalek or an old this, or they may be just...
That's true.
It could be something like that, and we're just getting our hopes up. One of the things that I found really interesting about last season, because as you mentioned, there was no, like, except for that resolution where we were into the Daleks, there wasn't a lot of scary monsters or bad guys or anything like that. I felt like that this season, and I know they said it was going to be standalone episodes and everything, but it really was about like the personal journeys that everybody was going through. And I don't know if that was meant to establish like who these people are as individuals or what. But one of the things that I really liked was that this season felt like they really took the 12th Doctor's last words seriously, and I think Chibnall took that seriously, where they said, you know, be kind, laugh hard, you know, run fast. And so I feel like this season was the 13th Doctor kind of coming into her own, taking what the 12th Doctor had last said to her and really living that mantra. Because it was a lot happier, funnier, like not so intense. And I really love that. And I love seeing a softer side of her. But somebody mentioned to me that what will happen when these companions who've seen this like happy-go-lucky 13th Doctor.
Impish-like character, this sort of magical kind of figure that they've
what will happen the 13th when they Doctor see, is. You know, that she was once this very moody ninth or tenth or war doctor, like, what, you know, will it change the way they see her? Will they like abandon her? Will they not want to travel with her anymore? You don't see where she talks. She talks a lot about her past, but it's very like, haha, light and funny. It kind of the way Matt Smith did. Matt Smith's character, his doctor was very like, oh yeah, I was married to Marilyn Monroe, blah, blah, blah. It's all just like in passing. Yeah. So I'm really interested to see if it's going to take a darker tone, you know, the next season when people start to kind of really get to know who she used to be, and will it change the way they feel about her?
Yes. I mean, this is the thing with me, Matt Smith, he always felt like he was containing something behind his eyes. Even if what he was saying was superficial or maybe a bit scatty, there was always something behind the eyes, a great way to it. My big problem, I've got several problems with Jodie's Doctor, but my big problem is the fact, certainly up to now, that it was played very much on that one level. Although I think what you're saying and your reading of it is, you know, very viable, and I'd like to think, because that is quite a romantic notion. It is very Doctor Who, and I'd like to think there was some truth in that. Maybe there was, maybe there wasn't. But I think across my feeling is that across just 10 episodes, and particularly with such a big gap in between, and to sell a female Doctor as well at that crucial time, the fact that they weren't prepared to play it on other levels, or to write it on other levels, or to give her the direction to reach the character at those other levels, if she's capable of doing so, I find that a difficult thing to process and to extend that amount of generosity to. I view the character as she's portrayed it up to now as very much this kind of like a magical, fantastical character who sort of skips along behind everybody else and says very little of any great worth. And so I'm hoping for a big turnaround this time, I think, to really, because I think it serves the stories, because you're right, some of the stories last time, and I think we'll get that this time too, were very much about people and about choices and about laying blame, which is another thing that didn't set well with me. But sometimes that can make for really good drama. It's certainly viable as a dramatic choice. But yeah, I think if they, you know, being constructive, every series of every program should look to be better than the one that went before it, shouldn't it? So I think I would hope that we just get that variety back to both the stories and the central character. And I think the all joking apart, the rubber monsters and the things that I like, the rubber monsters, all that sort of thing, they're not integral to that, not at all. And my own feeling is that the monsters, as much as they, and particularly the returning monsters, as much as they are identifiable with Doctor Who and part of Doctor Who, and they're the things we buy merchandise of, if you haven't got a story worth telling with them, to use them anyway is to do them an even greater disservice. So I hadn't got a huge problem with them not being around last year. In fact, I was quite hungry for it. I thought we'd seen maybe a little too much of the Cybermen during the Stephen Moffat time. It's a very... It's...
Nightmare in Silver, for example. Like, it just seemed like a little much.
Yeah, and they were back very, very regularly. Maybe less so. Maybe less so with the Daleks. It's I think if you've got the story, that you're compelled to tell, ideally, you know, if you've got a greater lore and a fabric and this toy chest full of characters, and you've got somebody that's, if you want to tell a story about a space police force that are a little bit corrupt, and you've got the Jadoon in your toy chest, yeah, use those. Don't create new ones by all means. Yeah. But yeah, to use them in a story that would cheapen them, I think would be a mistake. There's also talk of the Sea Devils coming back from 1972 and 1984, the cousins of the Silurians. I'm not sure how much truth there is in that. There's been no pictures.
That sounds fun.
They are fun. They're not the best looking customers in the world, but yeah, they're fun. They used to wear string vests, and then they started dressing as samurais. Who knows what they'd wear if they returned again now? But more importantly, I think more potently, there's talk of the Master returning at some point. I won't say they're inseparable, but Doctor Who without the Master for a long period of time, he's sort of noticeable by his absence. And the actor that they've mentioned that could be playing him is Sacha Dhawan, who played Waris Hussein in the Adventure in Space and Time TV movie from the anniversary, you know, about the creation of Doctor Who. So he could be the actor that's going to play the next incarnation of the Master. Do you miss the Master? Would you be keen to see that one, Monica?
I love storylines with the Master so far. So I'm just excited. Honestly, at this point, I'm excited for anything. And I think you made a really good point about like the absence and the fact that it was only 10 episodes. You know, I think that if they had come back a little sooner, we wouldn't have to be overanalyzing Jody or the episodes or anything. We're just kind of like consuming new stuff and taking it. But I think right now, because there's such an absence, all we're doing is talking about this season and overthinking it, overanalyzing it, over everything, because we just want to consume new Doctor Who. Yeah. And so at this point, I'll take anything. Yes, I love the episode. I'm excited about it. But just give me Doctor Who. Like,
We want to be grabbed, don't we, Monica? We want to be gripped, grabbed, thrilled, all these things. We're here waiting, Chris. Bring it on. Because the general audience, we as fans, we crave this, don't we? The anticipation of it. But the general audience, to be fair, does need to be grabbed more than ever, coming off the back of this gap year with us living, you know, we're living on rations, and so are they. You know, the general public, I think, have started to forget a little about Doctor Who. They've got to sort of woo them back. And there've been precious few moments of real excitement about Doctor Who at all throughout 2019. I think the recent remake of the missing episode Mission to the Unknown was something that stands out to me. We've
and
had moments.
It stands out with fans that really know Doctor Who, but there's also a huge fandom that's just barely touched the surface of it. And I think that more exposure on these things would help kind of ease that gap, because there's so many people that don't know about the animated series or the animated episodes and missing episodes, and they don't know about all this other content that they can be consuming. And so they just think Doctor Who is gone.
Yeah, so you think they should push harder with that?
I do, at least especially in the gap year, you know. I think that they should push harder. I don't think enough people know. And sometimes they talk about things like that and people are like, what? Like, what are you even talking about? And I'm like, oh. And they're like, oh, I'm so glad you told me about this. but you would think it wouldn't need to be me that told him about it. It should be, you know, marketing. And
ideally, it should be the BBC. Yeah, we do their jobs. We do their jobs for them. But to be honest, Monica, we've always done their jobs for them. Pull your finger out, BBC. We've always, always done that. But I noticed that lately, the biggest thing to sort of escape geek culture and make it into the mainstream media were all those production problem rumours that were all over the summer, which, you know, I won't go out because we still don't really know any more about that. You know, we may still hear rumours, but that's kind of in the past. But there was one other thing that did create really quite a big splash. I think it was around Comic-Con, actually, where at first it was John Barrowman and then Billy Piper started talking, because Captain Jack himself, he wants to bring back the team from what he calls the Golden Age, John Barrowman. He wants to bring them back wherever and however he can. And you know what? Fair play to him. But the world seemed to agree. And all this talk that he was putting out there of maybe doing a Doctor Who-y, Torchwood-y movie of some kind really ignited enthusiasm. And I think there was a convention not long after. It may have been Comic-Con, actually, where somebody sort of flanked down David Tennant and said, "Have you heard what John Barrowman said? Would you do a Doctor Who movie with Billy Piper and John Barrowman?" And he laughed it off and said, "Oh, well, you know, John." But Billy Piper, she chipped in with a little about this. And she said, I'm going to read this out because I made a note of this. Billy said, "I would like to see a one-off dark comedy about Rose and the Doctor living in a parallel universe. But instead of it being really sci-fi, it can have an element of sci-fi, but it should be very much about their romantic relationship and what's happened to them in the time since we've left them." So that would be the Metacrisis Doctor. Just them cohabiting in their normal environment. But this, I mean, that does sound kind of fun, kind of Big Finishy. But does that idea appeal to you? Do you see why people get so excited about this sort of these flights of fancy?
And I think today, like, that's how things are starting to get made, is that fan push, and for us to say, we're demanding this, we want this. Because I think too, networks get scared about, you know, they have so much money, so much budget, where are they going to put it to? What's going to work? Is that really niche? That, you know, wanting to see the Metacrisis Doctor and Rose, is there only like a certain amount of people that are going to tune in to watch something that's like a spinoff technically, and it doesn't have all the elements, like you said? For me, yeah, I'm going to watch because that sounds amazing. But I understand like the hesitation of networks to like put something like that out. I understand the hesitation of, you know, filmmakers or the people in charge saying like, well, nobody's going to watch this, or not enough people, or only 10 Rose fans are going to watch this. So I get it. And I get it from a financial point where, like, yeah, maybe they don't have the money to push this, but that's what streaming services are for. And that's what they're for. Yeah. They can make these things on a smaller screen or whatever. And if it's got that big buildup or, you know, whatever, then it can grow into something bigger later. But I would love to see something like that. And, you know, I love John Barrowman because he just knows how to, like, get the fans worked up and excited. He knows how to get the hype going. And I feel like the BBC should just hire John Barrowman to be their hype. Like,
he is the biggest wind-up merchant going. And God knows the energy that man's got is just mind-blowing. I think that Billy Piper and David Tennant would certainly enjoy playing that series. Whether people would enjoy watching it quite so much without an overt sci-fi element, I'm not entirely sure. But, you know, there are people crying out for Doctor Who spin-offs and all sorts of things just to shorten that gap, aren't there?
You know, somebody made a fan film, and I'll have to send it to you at some point. But somebody made a fan film of exactly that. And they took all these roles that David Tennant and Billy had played in other movies and other TV shows, and they cut it together to make it look like Rose and Metacrisis 10 just kind of like,
oh, really?
Living their lives and the emotional problems that they had and faced and stuff. And it's really, really interesting. The fandom is so creative, it's insane. Like, so creative. So just based on that little cut that fan made, yeah, I would probably watch that show.
Put us down for that, whatever you want to call it. What would we call that show? What would you call it, Monica? We'll have to have a think about that, won't we?
I don't know. I would probably be like rows 10 or something, but that's so generic.
So if you've got an idea of what we should call this Doctor Who spin-off show, tweet at Type 40 Doctor Who, and the best answers, we'll read them out on one of the shows in the near future. Everybody come up with something. Let's get the ball rolling on that one. For the sake of poor John Barrowman, who we know, he's a bit short of work, isn't he?
And he's so great. I really want to see him in a lot of things. So, come on, guys.
Can't get enough John Barrowman. As we speak, the cast of Doctor Who have actually finished on Series 12, and whatever specials may or may not be coming. Pics of the rap party that they had a few nights ago, they've emerged onto social media here and there of Mandip Gill dressed up as a skeleton. I think Jodie Whittaker's dressed as somebody from the Addams Family or something like that. Looks like they had a good evening, got on the outside of a few pints. The poor crew have a couple of further night shoots ahead. Wrap up warm, boys and girls, I'm sure. We await their efforts come the holidays or whatever, Christmas, New Year's Day, perhaps, maybe, Easter, who knows? Christmas or New Year, Monica, what's your preference, Christmas or New Year?
You know, I was such a fan of the Christmas stuff, and then and I was so anti the New Year's thing, but when it actually came to, I was like, oh, it's so nice to watch it on New Year's when I'm calmed and relaxed versus trying to run to family and visit everybody and interact with my family. It was kind of nice to see it on New Year's, just, you know, relaxing at home, the partying is over.
So, when you say calm and relaxed, do you mean sober?
Yeah.
excellent.
You know.
Well, look, Monica, who knows where we'll be with Doctor Who this time next year? Even in 6 months' time, it is a scary, but it's an exciting time in the fandom, whichever side of this divide you're on, I suppose you could say. Keep listening for more from us as Series 12 gets closer and starts to roll out, and I'll be back with more Type 40 very soon, so you can look out for that wherever you found this. It could have been on Apple Podcasts. You please search for the Fandom Podcast Network on what used to be iTunes. It's now Apple Podcasts. Drop us a review if you can. Just spare a moment, drop a review, just so new listeners can find us that bit easier. Think of the new listeners. maybe you found us on the Podbean app or Stitcher, Google Play or Spotify. With Spotify in particular, it's so easy to use, Monica, even I can use it, and we're so easy to find. Just search for the Fandom Podcast Network and you'll see our listings there. And if you're feeling brave, you can contact us directly. Email type40@gmail.com. Type40DoctorWho@gmail.com with the answers for what you'd call that Rose and 10th Doctor spin-off, or Twitter and Instagram at Type40DoctorWho. A Facebook group, Facebook page for the extra dimensional chit chat. I hope you'll come back again. Monica, have you enjoyed yourself?
I have, and I can't wait to have you on my podcast, the Temple of Youth podcast, because I've had a lot of fun and I want to follow up on some of these conversations.
Excellent. Well, we'll take that as legally binding then. I look forward to it. Yeah, I've heard some of the shows. It's a great show. It's a great website as well. We'll put some links to that in the show notes too. And remind us where else people can hear more or read more of you, Monica.
So you can find most of my work on templeofgeek.com. We have the podcast on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, you know, wherever podcasts are
found. Everywhere.
Everywhere. But most of my work you'll find on templeofgeek.com. If you want to interact with me online, my social media handles are ThisDorkyNerd. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. And then you can see my cosplay photos at Geek and Cosplay Report. It's mainly Doctor Who cosplay because I overdo it with Gallifrey 1. If you're going to Gallifrey 1 in 2020, please say hello to me. And let me take your picture because I live for that.
Is that in February?
It's in around February. February time? Yes. And I'm hosting two meetups. I'm hosting a 1950s Doctor Who themed cosplay meetup. And hosting a punk rock Doctor Who themed meetup at Gallifrey 1. So I'm hoping people come and they're like inspired Doctor Who cosplay.
I don't know which one I want to go to more. They're not on the same night, are they?
No, they're on different days. Are you going to Gallifrey 1?
No, I've never been to Gallifrey 1 myself, and Simon Horton, who's a regular voice in the show. You know, we've been saying how much we both love to go to Gallifrey 1.
But if you ever get a chance, it's a Doctor Who convention contained to one hotel with what they call LobbyCon after the convention hours, where Whovians just gather in the lobby and hang out and have fun, and it is the best.
It looks like the capital of the capital on Gallifrey, sort it of really brought to life, doesn't it? It really does. Yeah, thanks again, Monica, and thank you too for listening. Join us again next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network for more Doctor Who talk in another episode of Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast where we always have the time if you have the space.